Hello and welcome to the Anti-Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I am joined by Harry. And finally, the international break is over. It felt like it lasted a lifetime, didn't it?
Yeah. It's always terrible.
Aye. But before we get into the usual goings on, you know, the Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, which we will get to in time, I just thought very quickly at the start we should discuss something that for 10 teams in the Premier League, they're allowing fans back, which is obviously great news for those clubs, not so great for the 10 clubs who aren't allowing fans back. But, you know, just really quickly, I want to know your thoughts on this, Harry.
That's just the nature of it, I think. You know, the North has been the most affected by Corona, and, you know, that's why the South is able to open up, I think. I mean, I highly expect the Premier League to jack up, well, Premier League clubs to jack up the prices of tickets, because there's a lack of supply versus thousands of demand. So that, I think it'll probably work out okay for like the North, because they don't have to pay ludicrous prices.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can certainly see that. I mean, I don't know why the North is still having Earth show behind closed doors when the R rate is far better than London, but, you know, I digress. And I mean, you know,
dense population?
I don't know. The R rate is like 0.4 lower, so.
Well, isn't Liverpool, like, isn't the North more densely populated
than London? I doubt it.
You remember, you're doing the whole of London.
Yeah, but how many millions are in London? Like,
yeah, densely populated. So that's the how much fits into the area.
Yeah, I know what densely populated means, but you've got 9 million people living in London. Right?
Yeah, and it's pretty big.
As opposed to, you know, I doubt there's 9 million people in the whole of Yorkshire, for example. Right?
Actually, that's pretty spacious.
Yeah, there's 5 million people in Yorkshire and 9 million people in London.
Yeah, but there's 353 persons per square kilometre there. London. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you've got a very good point.
Yeah. And, to be honest with you, for the Premier League clubs, I want to make sure, you know, for lower league clubs, this is different. But for Premier League clubs, you know, I don't think that they should open to fans until they're open to all fans, because it gives teams a real unfair advantage. You know, you've got Fulham down in the relegation zone, and they have, you know, such a big advantage over West Brom, Sheffield United, Burnley now, because they're allowing fans in and we aren't.
Well, I'd say look at like Champions League and other leagues. I don't think it affects it that much. Aren't you in tier 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got like one of the least. Burnley has got one of the least densely populated areas.
Yeah, well, I know there's 90,000 people living in Burnley, so.
And then the most dense is Islington. All of it is London.
Yeah.
Hammersmith and Fulham, like you mentioned, Fulham and fans back. Holy shit. Then you've got Portsmouth, Southampton, and we're tier 2.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah. Government hates the North, but it's always been like that. So, but yeah, you know, obviously for the clubs that are sat in tier 2, you know, it's going to be a big boost for them for having fans back. I mean, you know, you can think, for example, the North London Derby, you know, you think those tickets are going to sell like out. But yeah, definitely be a boost to the fans of those Sunderland clubs.
Yeah, I guess.
But you know, I think there's not really much else to say.
Yeah, but is 2,000 gonna look a lot in a stadium like, you know, Spurs's, Emirates, you know, Stamford Bridge? Is that really? I don't think it's gonna make much of a difference.
Well, realistically, it probably won't make too big of a difference. Well, it might do. It's more the psychological thing of you knowing that there's people there, you know.
Yeah, but I think you play better because you know you're not going to get booed. You know you're not going to... You're literally just playing for your team.
Well, you know, depends what club you support. Would you be worried about your own fans booing you, you know?
No, well, I meant more as an away team.
Well, there's no away fans, so...
Oh. Well, even if it's like a south versus south?
No. Because they don't want people travelling through different areas.
Oh, okay. Good point.
But yeah, I mean, not really too much else to add on that topic unless you've got all else you want to add.
Well, there's another bit of big news.
Oh, go on then.
What do you mean, I'll go on then? It happened, like, very recently.
Well, refresh my memory then.
The passing of Diego Maradona.
Oh, of course, yeah. I didn't know what you were on about, yeah.
That's pretty big news, like...
Yeah, no, I just couldn't put two and two together in my head. Yeah, obviously, you know, a legend of the game, you know. That goal against England in 86, not the hand of God, that other one where he beat like five men, like that's absolute peach of a goal, absolutely beautiful, you know, and like absolute legend of the game up there, you know, in the talks of greatest of all time, you know, as he should be, and yeah, you know, it's, you know, really sad his passing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those people who, despite his lifestyle, people were immortalized because they saw him as like a god, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So when he passed, like, it was even shocking to me, even though I knew about his, you know, addictions and, you know, other like health issues.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, especially in Argentina, you know, he was seen as a god, you know. I know Napoli wore all 10 Maradona shirts, other players, and I think, are they renaming the stadium? Have I got that right?
They've renamed it from the San Paolo to the Diego Armando Maradona Stadium.
Yeah, which, you know, is a great gesture, you know. Yeah, that's a legend of the game, you know, no matter what Peter Shilton says.
Well, that was,
You know, I don't care what you say, you know, yes, it was handball, but Shilton should have bloody out-jumped him anyway. He's got no excuse.
And the second goal?
Yeah. Well, no, the second goal, you know, the second goal was, like, you know, it was... Goal of the century, I think it was voted.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, but how can you downplay that like he did?
Oh, yeah, no.
Just a dick.
The bitter old man. Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, it was, you know, very sad, you know.
Yeah. Should we get into... Switch our attention to the Premier League games.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I have no idea how I'm going to transition this.
Turn your attention, that's what BT did yesterday, so I'm just going to take a note out.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. And yeah, you know, I'll let you have the floor first, considering we're talking about another Chelsea win. You know, beating Newcastle away 2-0, up to third in the table now. Yeah, what do you think of this performance? What do you make of it?
Well, I'm obviously glad that we won, but I felt we should have scored more. We were on complete control, and we only were able to muster 3 shots on target. Just that is a little terrible in hindsight. Took us, you know, 55 minutes in between the goals to break them again, because Newcastle weren't the most defensively capable team. I think they've got the joint second worst defence. No, third defence. So, considering like Man United put 4 past them a couple of weeks ago, Brighton even put 3 past them, and we struggled to put 2 past them. It was a good performance in terms of possession, but not so much in terms of creativity and clinicality.
Yeah, I can see that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's 3 points, another clean sheet for Mendy. He's just done brilliantly, even without Thiago Silva sat in front of him. You know, it's a good defensive performance. Kante, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on Kante, because personally, I think, you know, now that he's actually in his preferred position, I think he's doing all right.
Yeah, he's made some of the most tackles now in the league. So, yeah, now that he's playing in position.
Yeah, I just think Kante, Jorginho, double pivot doesn't work.
No. And with this, yeah, the fixtures come out thick and fast, we should be able to rotate between him and Jorginho pretty easily. Neither one should be unhappy, and we shouldn't have to sell either. And I've done a 180 on him, because he's shite attacking, but, you know, off the ball, he's one of the very best.
Yeah, well, you know what you're going to get with Kante, don't you? You know, he's not going to, you know, spray 40-yard passes. He's not going to, you know, score a 30-yard banger, but he's going to, you know, sweep up everything in front of that back four. And yeah, like you say, with there's a lot of fixtures between now and the end of the year. You know, you got Spurs coming up on Sunday, which is a big match. You got Leeds, Everton, Wolves, Arsenal, Aston Villa. In between, you know, Champions League games with Sevilla and Krasnodar. You'd think that Kante would, not only Kante, but Lampard would rotate Kante and Jorginho, so that, you know, they both don't get burnt out.
And we've been very fortunate not to have key injuries. Or at least if we have had an injury, someone's been able to step up.
Well, I think that's the benefit of having probably one of the deepest squads in the league, I'd say, Chelsea at this point.
Also got that benefit of not having a long-term injury as well that Liverpool have been hit with, Everton.
Yeah.
I haven't really got much else to add. I mean, Newcastle, it's hard to beat. The positive thing is, it's hard to beat us, because when we've got the ball, it's in your half. If we are going to lose it, we've got Kante to clean it up. So I think the game against Spurs is going to prove if this system works, and if Lampard has cleaned up his, you know, defensive managerial style that used to be all attack minded. And that, you know, bit us in the arse, because he always got us on the counter.
And I think, you know, something that the best teams all have is they always have, not necessarily a plan B, but they have options that they can turn to. And obviously, you know, Lampard played, I think it's fair to say, the majority of last season with the 3-4-3. You know, it's, you know, going to be interesting to see, you know, if that is deployed in certain games. I think we've seen it a couple of times this season, but not often. He's mainly stuck with this 4-3-3. And I think a 4-3-3 in this sense, especially when you've got two wingers who cut inside, like Werner and Ziyech are currently at the moment, you need very dynamic number eights. And I think Mount and Kovacic fill that role perfectly, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, that Mount pass for the ball in the Champions League, that was brilliant. Yeah, I haven't really got much else to add.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's another decent performance. And a Chelsea side, like you say, this Spurs game is going to be absolutely massive. Could dictate who's challenging for the title come the end of the season, who's, you know, just fighting for top four. We'll move on to Villa and Brighton. What are your thoughts on this?
Let me just refresh my mind. Oh yeah, 2-1, right. Well, it's, we finally see Brighton getting goals. You know, they're good at creating chances, not so much finishing it. And the one to break the deadlock, you know, being Danny Welbeck of all people. Is he on a pay-as-you-play basis?
I'm not sure. I have to look into that. You'd think that that would be the sensible contract that Brighton would give him, because, you know, he has been very unlucky with his injuries. You know, but if he carries on like this, you know, which I think, you know, the two games that he has played against us and against Villa, obviously scoring. He's done really well. I'm not sure if he has a pay as you play. I know it's only a 1-year deal, but I'm not sure on the actual details of his contract. But yeah, I think, you know,
I find it interesting that Brighton have invested in older players such as Welbeck and Lallana, who haven't really been that great at Premier League clubs?
Well, you say that. I mean, you know, Welbeck on his day, you know, can be almost unplayable, you know. Like, even at Arsenal, where he didn't really have the best of times, he performed well during certain games. I think these two games have done he's done well. And for a free signing, you know. And as well, Adam Lallana, when he's fit, you know, he's absolute maestro in midfield. You saw Liverpool fans were unhappy to let him go. That's, you know, how good he was, and he was excellent for Southampton. So again, as a free signing, it was an excellent move in my opinion. And it's important not to just have, you know, young players in your squad. You need the older, more experienced players to be able to guide the younger players. You can't just have a fully young squad.
Yeah, that's true. But they also loaned out Shane Duffy, who was pretty decent last season.
Yeah, but I mean, is that more the club's decision or his decision? I mean, with Veltman coming in, and then you've got Byrne, Webster, Duncan, White, they're five centre-backs who are probably going to be ahead of him in the pecking order. So Duffy probably went out looking for first-team football. I mean, I'm not sure whether he's got it at Celtic or not. Yeah, so that would be probably Duffy's decision more than Brighton's decision. I'm sure Brighton would have been more than happy to keep him around.
And then Villa got an equaliser through Ezri Konsa. He's a bit like Zuma in that he's good when there's a set piece. I think he scored against Liverpool, actually.
I think so.
They won 7-2, so
hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's made the most tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really impressed with Konsa this season. I thought at the start of the season that Villa made a mistake not signing a centre back. But I think Mings has done a decent job. He's done a decent enough job this season. And Konce has really stepped up to the plate this season. I think he's been excellent. And yeah, you know, really impressed by that whole back five in general for Villa. You know, you've got Martinez, who, you know, was given a chance at Arsenal, impressed, but ultimately couldn't displace Leno, so they sold him to Villa, and he's impressed. You've got Matty Cash, who was a fantastic right-back for Forest, and he's done well for Villa so far. I've already mentioned Konce and Mings. And Matty Target is also a very good left-back going forward. He puts in some peaches of crosses. You know, you add that on to, you know, the returning Tom Heaton, who's coming back to fitness. That's another option in net for Villa. You know, I think that, you know, we've got a really decent, you know, lineup.
Yeah, Trezeguet, very good going forward.
Mm.
Do they play like wing backs? Because I think he'd be a good wing back.
Well, they usually play that 4-3-3, don't they? With McGinn, Louise, and Barkley in midfield, behind Trezeguet on the right, usually Watkins on the left, not Watkins on the left, Grealish on the left, and Watkins up front. Obviously, with Barkley going off injured, he was replaced by Bertrand Traore, who was also taken off about 70 minutes later, which I found odd. But yeah, that'll be a big loss for Aston Villa. Barkley has been very good this season, linking up with Grealish on that left-hand side of the attacking third.
Mm-hmm. The winner was scored by Solly March, who I think he had a massive chance against Man United, which he fluffed.
Oh yeah, the back post, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think both with March and Lamptey, that Brighton have two very solid wing backs that they can rely on. Very fast, very tricky. And they are able to provide the width so that they don't need to play with wingers. They can play with the front two very close together, like Welbeck and Maupay did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing is with Brighton, they're very good going forward, but like I said, not putting their back on the net. Very creative because of March and Lamptey. And actually, most of their team fills up the tackles so that they've made this season. So, like, Thiago Bissouma, Ben White, can't remember who else I saw. Yeah. Someone's doing their bit.
Yeah, they've really got a good system going, Brighton. They've been very unfortunate this season. I think 9 points from 9 games doesn't really reflect the performances they've put in. I mean, people are saying, oh, Brighton are starting to pull away. I don't think they are. They're still they're still 5 points above the relegation zone.
Yes,
and, you know, they've got a very tough 3 games coming up. Liverpool, Southampton, who are in immense form, and Leicester. So they're 3 very hard games. So, you know, Brighton, you know, I do think they'll be sort of down there come the end of the season, but I don't think they'll be in any danger. I think they'll definitely be 3 worst teams in Brighton come the end of the season.
And ironically, I think I recalled I went for Graham Potter to be the first sacked.
Yeah, I mean, when Potter came in, I was confused why they got rid of Houghton, to be honest with you. I mean, he got him up and kept him up, so I don't know what more they wanted from him. But Potter has come in and done a very good job in making this team more dynamic. They're a bit more open at the back than they were under Houghton, but they're scoring the goals to compensate for that.
I mean, Potter came from Östersunds in Sweden. I believe that was after the win against Arsenal that put them on the radar.
Well, he went to Swansea originally. That's it, originally. After Östersunds, he went to Swansea. Did okay in the Championship. I think they just missed out on the playoffs. And yeah, that sort of put him on the radar after one season. That put him on the radar of Brighton, who, you know, were in the market for a new manager. And he's done really well.
Okay, well, I thought he went from Ossesons to that one then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's, I rate him. It's kind of hard to measure how good someone is when they're in the Swedish league, because usually there's the usual suspects from there that make Europa League and Champions League qualification rounds. But they made, he made the Europa League with them, actually. So, and they beat Arsenal. Remember that or not?
Vaguely. I don't remember that in great detail.
Yeah, they beat him 2-1 at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really got much else to add.
So, I mean, we'll move on to this, you know, amazing shithouse performance from Mourinho. You know, it's just beautiful. I love this kind of game, you know. Mourinho having, was it 30% possession? You know, two shots on target, beats Man City 2-0. Absolutely brilliant masterclass from Jose, honestly. You know, because at the end of the day, there's only one stat that matters, and that's the final score.
See, Chelsea got a lot of criticism under Mourinho for Park and the Bars. But we got results, so...
I mean, I don't know if it's just because I'm a Burnley fan, but I'll never criticise someone for winning whilst playing shit football.
Oh, no, well, I wasn't aiming that at you specifically, but... Just fans in general. I mean, it's not exciting to watch. I'll hold my hands up to that, but it does get results.
I mean, if you're a Spurs fan, you're not going to care, are you? Like,
that's true.
I'd much rather watch my team win than play attractive football and lose. Like,
yeah. I mean, it did help that they got the early lead thanks to Heung-min Son. Who's, him and Kane have got a dream partnership.
Yeah, Kane linking up as well to assist Kane linking up to assist Lo Celso as well to make it 2-0. I think, you know, it's just going forward, you know, we're talking about the defensive performance from Spurs because at the end of the day, that's what the headlines are going to read about. But going forward this season, they've just been absolutely immense. I mean, Harry Kane, 9 assists, 7 goals from 9 games. You know, Son has 9 goals and 2 assists from 9 games. You know, that partnership is just coming up trumps constantly for Spurs. You know, and it's just been brilliant for him, really.
And they've conceded the least goals in the league. Just below Chelsea, but that's only because Mendy came in late. But yeah, their defence is very good. The park and the bus system only works if you've got a good defence, and they do.
And what a way to mark Pep Guardiola signing a new 2-year deal at the club.
Well, I find that shocking, man, because he hasn't... The season doesn't seem like it's going to be his season.
Yeah.
I think they'll struggle to be making top four the way they've been playing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we currently sat here, 8 games in, and, you know, they're just... they're on a negative goal difference, you know, this isn't Man City, like...
It's Man City before the Arab money. Well, I guess the only comfort is at least they're doing better than their rivals.
Well, not really, because Man United's above Man City at the moment.
Oh, right. Where am I getting... Oh, I need to refresh my memory. I'm an idiot, so I just...
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it really does surprise me that Guardiola's done it, because it feels like this team just feels really stale at the end of the day. You know, like, and thing is, really, no, I don't know, I don't want to say it, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Guardiola has spent a metric fuck ton of money for Man City. And how many of those signings that Pep Guardiola has made have actually been, you know, quality signings? You know, I'd argue only Bernardo Silva and maybe Laporte have been worth it.
Did he sign Mahrez?
Well, I mean, Mahrez has been good, but for 60 million, you know, I don't think he's been worth 60 million.
Turning out to be a pretty decent player.
Who's that, Ferran Torres?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. He could end up being a decent little sign. I mean, for £20 million, that's, you know, a decent fee for the club, you know, the size of Man City's. But, I mean, right now, you know, he doesn't get into that City team. I think a loan move could probably do him good, but that's only if everyone stays fit for City, which they probably won't do.
Well... I think his the destiny's in his own hands. You know, when he's been given the chance, he is scoring. So, I mean, in that Spain game against Germany, he was sensational. He's definitely capable of making that first team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, really. But, yeah, I mean, I'm struggling to think of any other Man City signings that, you know, impress me, really, from Guardiola at the very least.
Not Edison?
Well, yeah, I guess Edison. But, you know, there's not really too many else apart from that. I think, you know, for the amount of money that Guardiola spent, they definitely shouldn't be in the bottom half at the end of the day.
So where can I have a look at who he's signed?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the likes of Sane, who's, you know, been good when he's been fit, but they ended up selling him at a loss. Right.
Was that only due to the contract expiring?
No. Well, I don't know if he only had a year left or what, or whether it was just because of injuries, but, you know, they made a £20 million loss on Saturday, so.
I don't like him personally, but Gundogan?
No, I personally don't rate Gundogan, like, at all.
I don't rate him either. Just looking on Transfermarkt, because that's a pretty good database. He's bought.
I just don't think that they've replaced the key players that were here before Guardiola. You know, Yaya Toure, David Silva, Vincent Kompany.
I think with David Silva, we're starting to see that with Rodri, even though he does play in a deeper role.
Yeah, I think Rodri was sort of brought in to be more a Fernandinho replacement than Rodri. But I think the problem is with Rodri is he doesn't cover as much of the pitch as Fernandinho, so that's leaving them more exposed at the back. I don't think he can play that deep a role on his own. Because, I mean, at Atletico Madrid, you know, we know that Atletico are a very compact, very tight defensively, and compare that to Man City, who are very liberal at the back. I think Rodri defensively should be doing a bit more for the position that he's in. I just don't think he stacks up to Fernandinho, to be honest with you.
I'm just looking at other players he's bought. He bought Zinchenko.
How much was Zinchenko?
1.8 million.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, he's done okay. I mean, you know, there's talks of him wanting to leave, but he's on a long-term contract, so I doubt that'll be on a free.
I'm having a look at this list, and there's a lot of hit and misses, even at Barca, even at Bayern.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just look at the signings that Guardiola has made that hasn't missed, you know. Nolito for £17 million, Bravo for £17 million, you know, Stones for £50 million, you know. You look at Mendy for £50 million, you look at Danilo, £30 million. You know, Cancelo, another one, £60 million. Like,
Jesus, how much it was?
Yeah.
Christ. I mean, but Bernat at Bayern didn't work out. You bought Caceres, Kerrison, Seydou Keita. Dimitro Krogrinski, Alexis Sanchez to Barca. Yeah, all these big ones have been at Man City and they've been flops. His biggest transfer was bringing Zlatan to Barca.
But then he managed to alienate Zlatan, so.
He did, yeah. Have you read Zlatan's book?
No, I haven't. Is it worth a read?
Yeah, it's just called I Am Zlatan.
Of course it is. But yeah, what else do you want to say on this game? Is there what else on just going back a little bit to Spurs and Man City? Is there what else you want to pick out?
22 shots, 3 on target.
That sticks out. Yeah. I mean, City have really missed Sergio Aguero. I think he's likely to start against Burnley, from what I've heard. And that could be a real big boost for City. I think he's been a big miss. They've missed that lethal clinicality that Aguero brings. And I think he's been unlucky, Aguero, because he's never... You know, because he's struggled so much with injuries, he's never had that, you know, insane season that a lot of strikers have. You know,
we're certainly not going to see it as he's getting older.
No, exactly. But he's never had that, you know, 30-goal season. I mean, he's got close, you know, back to 2015, 2016 times, and he's got above 20 goals. But he has been unlucky with his injuries. And, you know, he's only going to be slowing down now. You know, he's 32 years old. He's probably only got one or two more years at the top of his game.
Turning to Atleti one day? A lot of players do that.
I can see that, yeah. Maybe he goes back to Argentina as well. Maybe that's another possibility. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Aguero's plans are. But, you know, you just look and think, you know, they are going to miss Sergio Aguero. And can Jesus step up to fill that void? You know, I'm not sure. You know, they'll probably, in my opinion, I don't think he will. I think they'll have to bring in another striker, the quality of Aguero.
Jesus plays as many games as Aguero due to those injuries, whether that be off the bench or starting. So I don't think he has proven it.
And to be honest with you, I think Jesus plays better out wide than he does up front, in my opinion. Because it takes him probably two or three chances to score.
Yeah. He's rapid, so that's definitely more of a benefit being out wide. I don't know what his passing across is like, to be honest.
No. But I just think whenever I've seen him out wide, I think he's done really well, you know. Against Real Madrid in the Champions League, that was the game that really stood out for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting a brace from out wide, I think, in my opinion, that's his best position at least.
Oh yeah, definitely with his speed, you can cut inside and yeah. When you ring up Pep Guardiola and ask him, but they've actually been trying Ferran Torres in the middle, and that's worked in the Champions League.
Yeah, maybe it's something to consider in the league itself. I think, it's definitely something that should be considered at least.
I think out wide's his best position because he did get a hat trick against Germany out wide. He got a brace against Marseille out wide.
Aye.
What's the next game then?
I mean, I know that you're going to have a few words about this. I feel like you're going to be repeating a lot of what you've said previously. We'll go to Man United and West Brom.
Drab. I mean, you come up against one of the worst defenses and only getting one goal is bad. Bad. Wasn't it from the penalty spot? Bruno.
Yeah, it was. And Sam Johnson was about a blade of grass off his line.
Yeah.
And it had to be retaken after he originally saved it.
Yeah, West Brom got a penalty overturned. Don't know how they worked that out. Yeah, Man United are penalty merchants. I think that's been established at this point now. I think I'm surprised no one's brought up corruption. The amount of penalties they're getting is wild.
I don't think it is corruption. I just think it's luck, to be honest with you.
I just, yeah. They just play for penalties. And then we've seen how that's worked against a fellow top six team. They get absolutely smashed. So, yeah, if they make the top four, that would be very surprising.
I think, yeah, they are definitely, and they have been struggling for a while now, Man United. I think, I don't understand why Donny van de Beek isn't getting more chances, because he, whenever he plays, he looks their most dangerous player. I don't know if that's just me, but.
Yeah. I'd agree. Well, certainly Bruno. Know, is there mid? I don't know. They've spent way too much on a defence that's proved terrible. They're not in Europe this year, are they? Not cool.
United, yeah, they're in the Champions League.
Oh yeah. Someone shoot me, Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's like they can batter a team such as Leipzig, such as Istanbul Başakşehir here, and then they'll. And then there's games where they're really tightly contested. You know, Chelsea losing to Arsenal, losing to West Brom. Just very inconsistent. And the majority of their goals have come from the penalty spot.
It's it's not great. But yeah, is there all else you want to add on, or will we move
Let's move on.
on? And we'll go to we'll go to Everton 3, Fulham 2. What did you make of this game?
Really fun game, end-to-end stuff. I watched this. Calvert-Lewin, it takes him 42 seconds to score. They showed the whole thing in the highlight packages on BBC when it was on. Yeah, just goes to show the ineptitude of that Fulham defence. To go to sleep 40 seconds in is. And then they get some round of play. Bobby Reed gets the equaliser. Was he Bobby Dankovia Reed, isn't he?
I'm not sure. I know he used to play for Cardiff.
Yeah, he did. He was, his best days were at Bristol City, I think.
Hmm.
Anyways,
Yeah, well, he's, you know, he's only 27, so he's still, you know, well, he should be his prime, really.
Three goals.
Yeah.
And Calvert-Lewin finds back of the net again. And Lucas Digne was probably man of the match for me, and he's going to be missing 2 months due to an ankle injury. So that's a massive miss.
Yeah. I think, especially with Everton, you know, losing both fullbacks through injury now, you know, it's going to be a big loss for him. You've got players coming out. We've also got players coming back in. And I think Richarlison, you know, they've definitely missed Richarlison. I think that front three of Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin and James, you know, they are really dangerous. And they showed that again, obviously. Calvert-Lewin getting a brace, probably the most informed forward at the moment. Yeah, they're both, you know, firing and doing really well. And yeah, this Fulham team look like they're going to be this season's Norwich, you know, good going forward. You know, they can get a couple of decent goals, they can play some decent football, put a couple of passes together, but they can't defend.
I thought Iwobi played really well in this game as well. Then Fulham get a penalty, don't they?
Fulham should never be allowed to take penalties again, ever. They've lost their penalty privileges.
Yeah, we've seen some of the worst penalties in Premier League history in the matter of 2 game weeks, which is incredible. I kind of feel for them, but at the same time, they're our local rivals, so fuck them. The best way to describe it was like Terry Moscow 2008. That was shocking. Then Ademola Lookman sets up Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and that makes it 3-2. Actually, Fulham start knocking on the door to get an equaliser, and they came pretty close. They actually turned that, you know, what was meant to be a, you know, like a result in stone into a very shaky lead. Because once that goal went in, it lifted the spirits of Fulham. And Everton were all over the place. They were just Fulham couldn't put it away.
And I think this is definitely something that we've seen from Everton this season. Is they have been hit and miss. You know, before this game anyway, they're, you know, in a rough patch of form, you know, went 4 with only 1 draw. But yeah, you know, this is a game that they should be winning, really, Everton. I mean, it's a game that, you know, this time last season they probably wouldn't have won. You know, but they did manage at the end of the day to crawl over the line. And yeah, that puts them in 6th at the moment. 19 goals scored, which is, you know, only bettered by the current top 3 at the moment. And yeah, like, I think Everton, you know, they're going to be knocking on the door for Europe come the end of the season. I don't think they'll get Champions League. I think that's a step too far. When you've got the current top 4, and then you've got to consider Man City and Man United are probably going to be up there at the very least, if not getting it, they're going to be up there. As well as, you know, certain outsiders like Wolves, Villa, West Ham. Yeah, I don't think they'll necessarily get top 4, but I think they'll definitely be challenging for, you know, that top 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if I were to criticise anything, it would be not Michael Keane, but definitely Pickford. And whoever partners Keane, whether it be... Would Godfrey usually play his right back, and he's been sort of put into the back five, and then back... it's going to be interesting how he's going to deal with Digne now.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Nkoulou will step in, 20-year-old free signing from Marseille. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. And yeah, I think it's pretty much common knowledge that Everton need a new goalkeeper. I mean, when he's been dropped for Robin Olsen, like, that's not a good sign. And, you know, I still don't understand why he's England's number one.
Me neither. They've got a perfectly capable deputy in Olsen. So, and they, the games that they played him in, he's done a good job. I haven't really got much else to add.
So I might as well move on to Sheffield United and West Ham. West Ham getting the 1-0 win. Sheffield United still, you know, rock bottom of the league. 1 point from 9 games. 4 goals scored, 15 conceded, sorry. And yet, it was a dull game. And it's not looking good for Sheffield United. 1 point from 9 games. That is dire.
Well, I've said this before, and it seems it's commonplace now to just repeat it. They've got a good defence. It's just that attack is just awful. In January, they're going to have to invest in 2 or 3 strikers to change their fortunes, because they can keep the ball out of the net, or at least keep damage control. But they just, at the other end, they're absolutely hopeless.
I mean, you know, I think they're just missing Jack O'Connell, you know, really badly. You know, you had Jack O'Connell on that left-hand side, you know, and he would push up. He would, you know, get on that left-hand side and get balls in. And, you know, he's out for the season, and they're really missing that attacking impetus, you know. Last season, Sheffield United's attacks were roughly the same amount of attacks from the left and from the right, whereas this season it's almost exclusively down the right-hand side with Basham and Baldock providing the width out wide. And yeah, it's just not, you know, it's not working for them. And I think especially when you have Ramsdale, who is a decent little keeper, but he's not Dean Henderson. Dean Henderson last season, I think, prevented, was it 8 or 9 goals from XG against last season? So they're obviously two key misses for Sheffield United. And I think that those injuries have hampered Sheffield United, and they haven't replaced them effectively. You know, whoever we've seen play the Jack O'Connell role, whether it be Ampadu or Ender Stevens, have been the two most common players to fill that role. Neither of them have been anywhere near the quality of O'Connell. And it's shown, because they've only got 1 point from 9 games, which is, you know, that is easily relegation form. And they definitely need to be looking at someone who can fill the voids of those two players in January.
Yeah. How much did they spend?
It was over 20. I don't know the exact thing.
It's been absolutely terrible.
I mean, he's had a bit of a rough time. I mean, you know, I don't know what it is, because he was very good at Swansea. He was very good. You know, he got 1 goal every other game for Swansea, and he signed in January. You know, like, that he was exceptional.
He's the Haaland of the Championship.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's only, what, 20, 21, so he's got time to improve. But Sheffield United don't have lots of time.
that's quite a big fee, and to not score. He's played 5 games and not scored. They need goals now. And they shouldn't have invested in a young player who, you know, he's gonna pay back that price in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all right having those sort of players where, you know, you're not getting, you know, loads of goals. I mean, last season, was it 38 goals, 39 goals they scored? Sheffield United, you know, they finished ninth. So, you know, they weren't scoring loads last season, you know, like you would a team, you know, who finishes top half would do. But it was just the fact that they were so solid defensively. And they're not now. And I think the loss of Jack O'Connell has a lot to do with that.
I bet Henderson still misses, he wishes he was there, but he's not getting much game time at Man United.
I think a loan move out in January is what has been discussed as on the cards.
Right.
And I mean, that, you know, that's something that should definitely be explored. I mean, Sheffield United have conceded 15 goals this season in 9 games. After 38 games last season, they conceded 39. So they've already conceded more than a third of what they did last season.
Yeah. If they had a better attack, they would concede less shots. And, you know, therefore less goals. But the fact that the attack is completely useless, they've literally got nobody to play to. So they're just giving the ball away. Because Ollie McBurney is just a target man, and he's not really got, he's got no end product.
I mean, I like McBurney. I think he's a decent player up front with the right partner. But I think between Brewster, McGoldrick and Burke, you know, they're just not great, really.
I mean, if you were Chris Wilder, who would you be looking at?
I'm not really too short, to be honest with you. He probably wouldn't move at this point because he's only just joined. But potentially someone like an Ivan Toney for Brentford. Potentially even someone, you know, if you want to go for the more experienced route, someone like Timu Pukki would be a good option up front for him.
Maybe they have to look at foreign leagues if it's going to be cheaper. What about Adam Armstrong at Blackburn?
You will not find me praising a Bastard Rovers player.
Okay.
Obviously he's the top scorer, so you know, he's got to be doing something right.
Yeah, that's true. I doubt Patson and Daka would move to Sheffield United. I mean, they're probably... Are their owners pretty strict on how much they spend? They probably think that you spent 20 million on Brewster, that's your lot.
I don't think so. I mean, they're owned by sheikhs, so, you know, I don't think they are. I mean, they did spend, if my memory serves me correctly, they did spend quite a bit in the summer.
Okay.
I mean, you know, brought in Brewster, as well as, you know, they brought in Burke, Lowenbogle and Ramsdale.
And
they didn't really sell anyone, so. Yeah, which would probably, over the course of the season, be, what, like, 4 or 5 million. So. Yeah.
Wait, Bogle from Derby?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Bogle and Lowe both went there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why they signed Bogle if they're not going to play him. Because he was a great right back for Derby, you know, really young, really promising, really exciting. And he's gone to Sheffield United and he hasn't started a league game yet, which, you know, surprised me. I mean, I'd kill for someone like Jaden Bogle at Burnley.
Wait, he plays right back, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Hmm. Is there a Bogle? Wasn't there a Bogle at Wigan? Omar Bogle, maybe?
There could have been.
I'm probably making shit up, aren't I?
Oh, Omar Bogle. Is that what you're on about?
Yes.
Centre forward, yeah. Well, he's at Charlton now, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, correct. Jesus, wow, I'm...
I want to give a bit of credit, though, before we move on as well, to Seb Allaire. He's had a bit of a rough time at West Ham, obviously brought in for a big fee, and he's not hit the ground running, you know, to the extent of, you know, his strike partner Mikel Antonio. But what a strike this was for the only goal of the game.
Oh, yeah. Lightning bolt. I mean, that is how you separate two sides. What a bloody goal that was.
Yeah.
From a dull game, and that just exploded into life. Christ. Yeah, you're not saving that. Don't care who you are.
No.
Got anything else to add on this game?
No. I mean, I think we can move on to 0-0 between Leeds and Arsenal. And that's Arsenal, who have gone 8 hours without scoring from open play in the league.
That, wow. Considering their attack, that is shocking.
Mm.
Yeah, their top four hopes are dwindling. I guess they did keep a clean sheet, if that's any good you can take out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Arteta has, you know, managed to keep that Arsenal defence solid. But, you know, to say that Arsenal fans were all hounding Unai Emery for his defensive football... they're not really giving Arteta the same treatment, which, you know, is ironic, really, because he's arguably playing even worse football.
Oh, yeah, agreed. Oh, yeah. They're solely reliant on Aubameyang.
Who isn't firing at the moment.
No, that's true. Having said that, they do see a different bit of fortune in the Europa League, but the opponents are nowhere near the same level as facing. So, and Aston Villa, you know, even kept a Liverpool team quiet when they played Arsenal. So again, probably not expecting a goal there, but Leeds. They should be scoring there. I know, because Leeds, they have, you know, been able to come up with some good results, but they do typically concede.
What has?
Yeah, so it's a definitely a it's definitely a very good clean sheet for Leeds to take. I mean, you know, Calvin Phillips returning was a big. Is a big miss for Leeds, so having him coming back was great. And they were coming off a bit of torrid form, really. I mean, they only had one win in the last five before this, so getting a clean sheet, getting a result, it's going to do wonders for Leeds. And I mean, they've got Everton and Chelsea next, who are going to be hard games.
Everton Leeds, that excites me.
Yeah.
Fulham game win. Should be end-to-end stuff.
And also, I just want to touch on really quickly, Nicolas Pepe, what an idiot.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, you know, like, I genuinely don't know what he was thinking there. And I mean, I'm a fan of Pepe. I defended Pepe quite a lot on this podcast. I think that if he was given a decent run in the side, I think he'd do wonders. But he's not helping himself with, you know, doing stupid stuff like that. You know, when he's finally getting a chance to start in the team, and he's doing stupid stuff like that. It's idiotic.
Agreed. I can't really compare it. 72 million, and he's done very little to warrant that kind of price tag.
Well, the price tag isn't his fault.
No, that's very true. But you must carry that kind of weight on you, surely, because you're the one responsible for at least most of that fee. Because of your performances.
Yeah.
They obviously jacked it up because they obviously wanted to keep him. But then again, we've seen players leaving Lille and not working out. Osimhen going to Napoli. He's been pretty crap. Jonathan David has signed for Lille. He's been pretty crap.
Yeah, you know, you can't really trust, you know, performances in foreign leagues to translate over to leagues because, you know, different leagues have different styles of play. And, you know.
Eden Hazard came from there.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not saying, you know, you shouldn't ever buy foreign players because that would be stupid. But all I'm saying is just because a player works in one league doesn't mean that they'll necessarily work in another.
Always translate, absolutely, yeah. And there are a bunch of players that have left Lille and become superstars, like Eden Hazard. Trying to think of some off the top of my head, which is a bad idea. There are players that have left Rennes and become... There's plenty of players that have left the French League and become big names. Zinedine Zidane, Claude Makélélé, N'Golo Kanté, Mahrez, Bernardo Silva.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely a lot of talent, you know, but it's just, you know, managing to pick out the ones who will, you know, thrive in the league that you're currently playing in.
Yeah. Would you say it's better to pick up players from the bigger teams then? Like a PSG?
Well, it's probably more reliable, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Outside of that Pepe incident / stupidity, I don't think there's much else to talk about, is there?
No, not really. Yeah. If we move on to the very crucial game, you know, in the top part of the table. Liverpool, who are sitting second at the moment, Leicester is sitting fourth. After a 3-0 win from Liverpool.
That just shows the... I mean, we have criticised the depth of Liverpool, but even when they've been handed such a bad hand with injuries and COVID and what have you, they're still able to come out with a completely comfortable win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, they've definitely been dealt a bad hand. But, you know, they're absolutely immense in this game. I mean, it probably should have been a lot more if it wasn't for Kasper Schmeichel. Ended up making 9 saves in this game. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, Leicester aren't chumps. You know, they're currently sat in 4th. And they just looked like League Two opposition compared to Liverpool.
I mean, who have Liverpool got this weekend?
Brighton away, Liverpool.
Right. Well, they've just come off a shock loss against Atalanta, so maybe that fatigue, the injuries, and finally catching up with them, and maybe Brighton could cause a shock.
But you'd think that also, you know, on the other side of the coin, be wanting to come out and prove a point, you know. The loss could galvanise him.
Very true. I think it gives a chance for players like Minamino to step up. Give him that chance.
Yeah, someone who hasn't really impressed, in my opinion, to be quite honest with you. He's definitely struggled at Liverpool. He's not really, you know, found his feet yet. But, you know, he's got time, he's still young. I don't think Klopp really knows his best position. But, you know, he's got time. And, yeah, another goal for Jota, who's been excellent when he's come in.
Yeah, just play him at striker. I mean, he's getting goals out wide anyway. Just put him in the centre and I'm sure he'll get even more for you. Just breakout player of the season. I mean, not saying that last season was bad, but last season he was good, now he's great. And it probably does help that he is in a team like Liverpool.
I think he's been a bargain, to be honest with you, from 30 million, you know. I think he'll definitely prove to be worth a lot more than that in a couple of seasons' time.
8 goals this season in all competitions.
Yeah, that's, you know, great, really.
Is there anything else to add? I mean, Leicester were very poor.
But, you know, again, it is against Liverpool, who were, you know, in great form. You know, Fabinho coming back was a big boost for them. But, yeah, they didn't really create, to be honest with you. I think the back five doesn't suit them. I think, you know, going to a back four would help them a lot. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't read too much into this Leicester performance. I mean, they've been excellent pretty much all season. You know, so I think we should judge them a lot more based on their game on Monday against Fulham, because if they struggle there, then, you know, then the alarm bells start ringing.
Yes. I think the back five has suited Castagne. So maybe if they revert to a back four, put him out wide.
Well, Castagne, I think he said he was 50-50 for the game against Fulham. So we could see him return. He's been injured for a few weeks now.
Pretty decent this
season. Oh, yeah, I think he's been, you know, one of the best players. Struggled with his thigh, but, you know, he was excellent when he played. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's been, you know, it'll be interesting because, you know, the next two games in the league for Leicester should be easy wins. So we'll criticise them if they're not. But I can't wait to move on, to be honest with you personally. I mean, we'll go to, you know, Burnley and Palace. Oh, it feels good to just have a win, finally. Like, you know, it feels like I've waited ages for it. You know, it's no coincidence that as soon as Ben Mee comes back into the team, we get 4 points and two clean sheets from two games. Like, he's his captain. I think any team would miss the captain, but I think we've missed him especially because he's a far superior centre-back to Kevin Long, let's be honest. That lineup is probably our strongest team at the moment. And I think Ben Mee coming back and Jay coming in has been the difference as well. Jay was my man of the match. Got an assist to set up Chris Wood for the finish. And just, you know, he does really well, you know, coming deep, collecting the ball, you know, finding space, getting in between the lines, you know. And that's what we need. You know, we play far better like that than when we do with Barnes and Wood up front, just don't oof ball up to him. Yeah, it's, you know, brilliant, really. Glad that we're back to his best. And what a save from Pope that was at the in the 90th minute. You know, putting his body on the line. He's ended up getting injured from that save. But that could be, you know, crucial in terms of his season. And yeah, you know, we're out of the bottom three. Defensively, we look as solid as we did last season. And now it's just about building on this and getting goals. Unfortunately for us, got Man City away next, so we're probably not going to get out there. But hopefully we can build. Because 5 points from 8 games looks far healthier than 2 points from 7 games.
Yes. I don't know how to analyse it from like a neutral point of view.
Well, you're not going to get that from me, so I think you should try your best.
25 shots, 9 on target is pretty poor from either side. And the stats were definitely in the favour of Palace, yet you came out on top.
Well, I think for the last 20 minutes, I think... The first half, I think we were the far better team. We had more possession. We created more chances. And we were far better in the first half. And I think in the second half, especially in the last, you know, 20, 25 minutes, I think the players definitely got a lot nervy because we were just trying to hang on to a lead, get the first win of the season.
Well, you were right about one thing in the first half was the possession. Palace had 3 shots on target, of which there were 3 saves forced out of Pope. Second half, you dominated in terms of shots on target.
Yeah, and we probably should have scored more, if I'm honest. I mean, Goodmanson hitting the bar, I think, you know, if he has a decent run in the team, I think that goes in. I think that's just down to a lack of match sharpness. That he didn't score that. It was a, you know, beautiful. He knew what he was trying to do. He wrong-footed the keeper, but he was unlucky that he hit the bar. And Chris Wood as well had a, you know, beautiful chance in the second half. He was just a little bit too much of a stretch for him to get any power behind the header. But he was very unlucky. If he was half a yard more forward, that would have been 2-0. So we definitely had chances to kill the game off.
Yeah, I mean, the stats speak for themselves, don't they? So, we've only really got 1 goal to analyse.
Aye. But I want to talk more about that save in the 90th minute from Pope. What a save it was.
Yeah, I mean, epic saves. But is saving 3 points... I mean, how long could he be out for?
From what I've heard, it's probably just this weekend that he'll be out for.
Okay.
Which we probably weren't getting out against Man City anyway, so...
Okay. If it was longer term than that, I would have asked the question, was it worth it, but... You know, you've got Man City next, and that's the only game he's missing, so...
And, I mean, Peacock Farrell's a more than capable backup. I mean, you know, from what I've seen of him from, you know, his performances at Burnley, he's stepped in and performed, you know, pretty well. And especially his performances for Northern Ireland as well. He's made some fantastic saves for Northern Ireland. So it'll be interesting to see him make his first league appearance against Man City.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely going to need to do some damage control against them. But then again, well, they have got Aguero back, but they're just only easing him back, and they've only scored 10 goals this season.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a tradition for us to get smacked by City. In the last two seasons, we have been beaten 5-0 by Manchester City 3 times.
Oh, Christ.
In the last five games, in the last five away games against Manchester City, the aggregate is 25-1.
Jesus Christ.
So I'm not holding out any hope for us pulling out a result on Saturday.
I was more thinking of, would it only be like 1-0, 2-0, City? Because they've only scored 10 goals in 7 games, actually.
Aye.
Wait, is this the game that was postponed?
Oh, no, we were going to play Man United. That was postponed.
Aston Villa. Okay, I got mixed up.
No, but yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, if you offered me 1-0 Man City, I'd take that. To be honest with you, at this point, like, just get it out of the way, and then go into, you know, the Everton game, the Arsenal game, the Villa game. You know. All teams who they've looked good at times, but they've also looked shaky at times. So, yeah, and I think the games, you know, 29th of December and 2nd of January, we're looking at Sheffield United and we're looking at Fulham. They're the two games where we need to win.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Always needing to get points with people around you, get the upper hand. And they do say around Christmas that is where that's a good projection for the rest of the season.
Aye. You know, usually around about Christmas, I mean, you know, it's a bit different this season because we're having, you know, matches crammed in at different points. But usually around about Christmas time is where you see the table start to take shape. We're roughly halfway through. But we're always better in the second half of the season. I mean, we were in the relegation zone at Christmas last season and we ended up finishing 10th. So, you know, I think I've got a lot more of a positive outlook than I did before this game. I'll say that.
Certainly helps that City aren't seeing much healthy, much, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Do you ever see when you play City that 1% chance that you could beat them or not?
Not away. I think at home we tend to do relatively well. I mean, I remember 2015 we got a result 1-0. 2017 we drew 1-1 with them. 2018 I think they only beat us 1-0. So at home we tend to do pretty decent against them. But it's just a way. We always get spanked. So, yeah.
Okay. Even with no fans?
Well, we got beat last season 5-0 against them with no fans. So, it doesn't make much of a difference, I don't think.
I don't see that kind of scoreline just given the way that they've been playing recently.
Well, I hope you're right. But, you know, yeah. It's tradition. So, you know, I'm not holding out much hope. But yeah, is there what else that you're wanting to add on? Maybe about Crystal Palace. I haven't touched much on them really, but they really missed Wilfred Zaha this game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they dominate stats and couldn't get a goal. I mean, yeah, like you said, Zaha's a big miss for them because he is their muse in attack. And he's been pretty decent this season. They're also missing Milivojevic, who takes over set pieces, and he would have been a bit of a threat in that department had you given anything away. I think it's just a too overly defensive team. And that's because they've got MacArthur and Riedewald in central midfield.
Mm.
And then they've got... Ayew is pretty decent this season. But it's always that strike partner that, you know, whether it be Benteke or Bashuai, who's just... They don't help him a lot.
Mm. Yeah, I think a front four of Townsend, Eze, Ayew and Zaha can be really dangerous, but, you know, they are very reliant on Zaha and they will miss him whilst he's out with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who have they got next?
Palace have Newcastle tonight, and then they've got West Brom, so two winnable games, definitely.
Yeah, true. Do you see him winning though, even without Zaha?
I can see him beating West Brom, to be honest with you. And Newcastle, to be honest with you, I can see that being a bar draw, if I'm honest with you. Especially a St. Maximinless Newcastle.
Yeah, because they're missing Wilson.
Are they missing Wilson as well? I didn't know that.
Oh, no, wait, I got that wrong. They're missing St. Maximin, like you said, and Ron Fraser's questionable.
Hmm.
You think it'd be a ball draw? I mean, it'd be on in the background, because I'd be doing, like, FIFA or whatever, but... Yeah, just looking at that head-to-head... Yeah, you could be very right. Or a 1-0 win.
There hasn't been more than one goal in that fixture since 2015, so...
Yeah, Palace win 5-1.
Aye.
Christ.
Aye. But yeah, if we're to move on to Wolves and Southampton, unless you've got else you want to add on?
No,
Right, well, we'll move on then. I'll let you go first. What are your thoughts on this game?
Wolves were very unlucky, I think. Despite having less possession, they had more shots. And my God, has McCarthy been one of the keepers of the season? He produced saves in this game. And, you know, to deny... 8/9 of what was, you know, put at him is pretty decent stat. I mean, if they had never, I don't know, maybe they. No, wait, Angus Gunn, he's at Stoke now, isn't he?
Aye, yeah.
Okay, right. Well, I've done that. Yeah, Saints got a really good team. It's just. They conceded so many shots, and they're very fortunate that McCarthy is playing the way he is, because they probably wouldn't be as high-flying as they are. Because Wolves caused them a lot of trouble, and they were very fortunate that when Pedro Neto came off the bench, he put it in the equaliser. They did that, a bit of fresh blood in there to... jazz it up. And like I said, Wolves unlucky.
Yeah, I think that's been a common theme for Wolves this season, is that they've played some good football, but they haven't really... They've definitely been unlucky, you know. Currently sat in 9th place, which, when you consider they don't have European football like they did last season... It's a little bit underwhelming from Wolves. Currently sat on a negative goal difference as well.
And that's because of their... That's because they're just not scoring enough. I mean, aside from that thrashing against West Ham, it's been very much a case of Wolves should have scored more in every game. You said that, you know, without having Europe, you'd expect them to play better, but I mean, it's actually seeing a drop in goals.
Yeah, which, you know, surprises me.
Just gonna have a look at how many goals they got at this stage last season. How many games are we in? Eight?
We're on the four teams that didn't play at the start of the season are on eight, the rest are on nine.
Right. Okay. So do 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 do. 1, 2, 4, 6, 7, 9, 11. They had 12 goals at this stage last season. Concede a lot more. So, I mean, they had a 5-2 loss against us and a 3-2 loss against Everton. So, defence has improved, attack has got worse. Which is, I mean, they haven't, well, actually, they have had a big loss in losing Doherty, but I think Nelson Semedo, Knight, Nori have done a pretty decent job, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, they've done decent enough. I mean, you know, I don't know, I just think Wolves, they have weakened in this window. I think, you know, injuries haven't helped them out. I think Connor Cody particularly is a big loss for them. You know, and, you know, I don't know, they just don't look as threatening as they did.
I don't know why that is.
No, I mean, you know, the two key men last season, Traore and Jimenez, are, you know, still consistently playing, so I don't know what's up with them, to be honest with you.
Maybe because they haven't got a Doherty driving the crosses in. But I think Semedo's been pretty decent going forward and back.
I think they've been all right defensively. I mean, 10 goals in 9 games isn't, you know, it's the same as Chelsea, you know. It's like, it's less than Leicester, it's less than Liverpool, you know. Only Spurs are better than that in the league this season. It's just going forward, they're not as effective as they were last season. I think a new winger to replace Jota should be the priority in January for Wolves, in my opinion, anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. They didn't replace him. That could definitely be a key to why they're not scoring as many. They've got Arsenal this weekend, who have got one less point as them, but as many goals and as many conceded. So, I mean, with either side with nothing to lose, do they just go all out? I mean, could it be a score draw or could it be a score draw?
Easy for you to say. Well, I mean, you know, you'd think that Wolves, especially with Arsenal having a very defensive setup, you'd think that Wolves would go for it, you know. You know, that'd be what I'd do anyway if I was Nuno, you know, especially with the poor form that Arsenal have been in as well. The fact that they've not scored in 8 hours in open play in the league, you know. Go for it.
Yeah, but having said that, both defences are pretty, or very capable, in fact. So that's why it kind of makes me lean towards the ball draw, because they're not as good firing them in.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I don't think that it will be a thriller. But, you know, I just don't think that I think Wolves should go for it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, have you got what else you want to add on that?
No, but I got a funny story.
Go on, tell us your funny story, Harry.
A funny story, but you know Bruges were playing Dortmund?
Yeah.
Well, one of their players didn't play, Emmanuel Dennis.
Oh, I've heard this, yeah.
Because due to COVID restrictions, they had to sort out the bus layout, and he refused to play because he couldn't sit in his favourite seat.
Yeah.
That is the most pettiest thing I've read.
I mean, you know, like, I think both, you know, both sides are being petty. I mean, you know, yeah, you know, you should be playing, you know, it's no excuse. But at the same time, it's not a fucking year seven school trip. You know, let him sit where he wants.
The same bubble anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we're currently, you know, an hour and a half in, so, you know, quickly go through Europe. Where do you want to start with, Harry? What sticks out for you?
Let's go. Wait, is this the Tuesday games?
Well, you can do whatever you want, Harry. It's free country.
Atalanta, the shock.
Yeah, it was a big shock. I mean, what were your thoughts on this?
It proves that despite going 64 games and being at home in the league, they are beatable at home. At least in the Championship. And against the team that they smashed 5-0.
Yeah, I mean, I know it was a rotated team from Liverpool, you know, seeing a couple of names that you don't usually see in there. But that's still no excuse. It was just, you know, a really good performance from Atalanta.
Yeah. They should have had more as well. Duvan Zapata had like a... I don't know, he did like a... He had his back to goal and just smashed over the bar. But, I mean, there were times where Atalanta could have got a 5-0 result of their own, which would have definitely opened some eyes.
Yeah, and Liverpool had zero shots on target this game, which is, you know, when you've got Salah and Mane, that's very poor.
Yeah, I wonder when the last time that would have happened. Yeah, so that's my game I'm picking out. What's your game?
I hadn't thought about it. Go on, we'll go to United. I mean, you know, Bruno managing to grab a brace. Surprised he didn't take the penalty for that trick, to be honest with you. But yeah, this was a far better performance from Man United than the one earlier in the season against Istanbul.
Yeah, that was a 2-1 loss.
And Van der Beek is the difference maker. I'll keep saying it. Every time he plays, Man United look 10 times better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree on that. This was at Old Trafford, right?
Yes.
So maybe it was that benefit of not having to travel far to Turkey. You know, they wouldn't have that fatigue. Given that, you know, how long their season's going to be. And it was, you know, Istanbul, Başakşehir are here doing the travelling instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, pretty straightforward victory for them.
It was, you know, just a decent victory. I think we should talk about Chelsea as well. Olivier Giroud getting a 90th minute winner, proving that he still has stuff to offer. And even though Lampard will not give him a chance, you know, he's still a very capable forward who would be a big loss for Chelsea since he's wanting to leave.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to fit him in given how well Abraham, Werner, and Ziyech are playing. I mean, he definitely has a spot in the squad. Whether it probably have to be rotation or off the bench, but definitely should be getting more games than he has. Because he's, like you said, he's definitely got something to offer and he's proved to do so, whether that be off the bench or starting for France. I mean, he could beat Thierry Henry's record as all-time scorer for France. He's currently 4 goals behind.
Yeah, which, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he did. You know, what? He's just very, very good striker. I don't know what to say about him. He's class, in my opinion.
He's underrated, certainly underrated.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
He scored one of the best goals I've seen, that scorpion kick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's because of his age or because... But he fits the Chelsea style because you've got Reece putting in crosses and we need a target man. But that performance, we were shaky for 40 or so minutes, and it has shown the evolution since Mendy's come in. Usually we would concede more than one in that time, and now we've only conceded one, you know, game at that point.
Yeah.
Recovering, so.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you said. Is there any more Champions League games stand out to you that you want to discuss?
Real Madrid, Inter.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily gone the way that Conte would have liked in the Champions League this season. Only 2 points from 4 games. Yeah, I mean, this Inter Milan side seems a lot better on paper than it does actually watching them.
Agreed. Maybe because they haven't been able to fully utilise the Lukaku-Lautaro partnership due to injury and COVID and what have you. So that's probably why. Also, in this game, it doesn't help that Vidal was being a complete twat.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you thought about that sending off. Something I'd like to see more in the Premier League, to be honest with you. Players getting booked, and if they're on a booking, players getting sent off for arguing with the ref. It never happens. And if you did that, then it would bloody stop people from doing it.
Yeah. Certainly would help in the low, like, grassroots of the game in terms of set referees if you're gonna punish it. I mean, if you get a yellow, it should leave it at that rather than effing and jeffing and whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
Because, well, you can't appeal a yellow, can you?
Don't think so, no.
So, oh well, he got his comeuppance by the ref, so. And that they should be using players like that as an example.
But yeah, it was just, you know, a decent performance from Real Madrid, who that does not look like a Real Madrid side, in my opinion.
No.
Just on paper. You know, you look at players like Lucas Vazquez and Mariano, you know, that doesn't scream, you know, most Champions Leagues of all time.
No, I don't think they're going to go far. Me, the favourites are Bayern again. Not just because they've won it last year, but they just ran.
Because there's no one else, really. So.
Yeah, it's true.
I But yeah, is there what else that stands out in Champions League?
Yeah, off the top of my head, yeah.
Oh, go on then.
No, I said there's none off the top of my head.
Oh, right. I thought you said there's one off the top of my head. I thought, bloody hell. Yeah, well, we might as well move on to Europa League then. What game do you want to go for first?
I watched Leicester Braga.
Aye, I did as well. What a bloody game that was. Bloody hell.
Agreed. You know, we love a bit of last-minute drama.
Aye. Really
and then we have plenty of that. I mean, from the jaws of defeat to grabbing a point and qualifying for the next round, that's quite a turnaround. And
yeah,
Rodgers is a brilliant manager, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do rate Brendan Rodgers, to be honest with you. And yeah, to come back from behind three times to manage to get a draw away from home in Europe is just, you know, it's great. Especially after conceding a 90th minute goal to put you 3-2 down, you know. But
yeah,
great mentality that he's put in that squad.
Yeah, I did question the appointment of Carlos Carvajal after he was at Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't he? Yeah, he wasn't so great there. Yeah, just a really good game. Not really got much else.
I mean, I wanted to quickly touch upon Celtic absolutely bottling it again. Yeah, they're just awful this season, Celtic. You know, not only are they bottom of their group, they're also 11 points behind Rangers in the league. So this could be the end of Neil Lennon at Celtic, which I would like because he's an arrogant twat.
Well, I haven't got a horse in the old firm debate. I don't really care. I mean, if it's on, I'll watch it. But I don't support either side or, you know, have a liking towards either. I don't know, like, to get absolutely thwacked twice against a Czech team, that's embarrassing. I mean,
yeah, not once, but twice is, you know. Like...
Yeah. Yeah. And the next two games are against Lille and Milan, who are, I mean, given that they've got nothing to play for. They might get absolutely battered there as well.
Yeah. I mean, they've conceded 13 goals in these four games. Like, that's awful.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that just reminded me of something.
Go on.
Marseille, they've got the record for the most consecutive losses in the Champions League.
Really?
Yeah, they just beat it. They were tied with Anderlecht on 12. After they lost to Porto, it was 13.
Good deal.
13, yeah.
I mean, that is poor. 13 consecutive losses, like, you know, that's stretching back seasons, that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Andre Vietra who said something like, we're not just losers, we're fucking shit. Like, that into a French, like, news thing. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Arsenal disposed of Mould easily.
Yeah, Balogun getting a goal as well, who, you know, looked like he was on his way out of Arsenal at the end of the season, but, you know, it took him, you know, about a minute roughly after he'd come on to score.
Yeah, that's definitely the competition for Arsenal to introduce their young lads in, given the less competitiveness of their, you know, group. you know, that's where we've seen Saka shine. And that's, you know, helped him earn a Premier League spot.
Mm.
So, I mean, I like that Willock. He's a good player.
Mm, yeah, I mean, he got 2 assists in this game. And Smith Rowe as well. I'm a big fan of Smith Rowe. I think he did great at Huddersfield last season.
Huddersfield, that's like an oxymoron, isn't it?
Aye. Sorry, Rob, if you're listening. He doesn't mean it. I think he's all right, Smith Rowe. I mean, he did decent, if I recall correctly. I think he got like, oh, I can't remember exactly. But I think he had a decent goal scoring record. I'll just look it up now.
One in 46.
I mean, he had 10 goal contributions in 32 games, so.
Alright.
So a goal or assist every 200 minutes is, you know, it's decent. And just quickly as well, that Harry Winks goal.
Okay.
I just thought I'd put that out, you know, out of the blue. Like, fucking hell, like, it was about 50 yards.
I mean, they were playing Ludogorets from Bulgaria, so that, it, you know, you're going to try something special against them.
Yeah, I know, but still, like, that is outrageous, that goal.
Yeah, still, yeah. Is there any other sort of... Can you think of any?
Not that stands out to me, really.
The Rangers had Benfica.
Rangers drew 2-2 with Benfica, so that basically guarantees them both to go through. There was 2-0 up, I know. Scott Arfield and Kemar Roofe, 2 players who have done well in England, getting the goals. But a Tavernier own goal and then a Pizzi equaliser made it 2-2, and that's how it ended. But both teams are 5 points ahead of third place, so...
Yeah. I mean, has Rangers ever won a UEFA Cup?
Yeah, I think they've won more than Celtic, if memory serves me correctly.
Lions, that's their only success. Yeah. I'm usually good at this stuff.
Oh no, they've never won it.
Yeah, I thought they didn't.
And Celtic won it once, did they?
Yeah, in Lisbon. Yeah. The Lisbon Lions.
Yeah.
I think don't quote me on that, I think it was 1963.
Right, well, someone... Can you please quote Harry on that?
I said don't quote me on it.
No, but I'll make sure that you are. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's about it for all the football this week. Have you got what you want to plug, Harry?
Yeah, I'll plug my Twitter, at HazardChelseaFC.
Yeah, and I'll plug mine, at RWGPCrispyFC, and you can follow the podcast, at AntiFootballPod. Oh. What? What's that?
Devin.
What's happened?
It was 67.
Oh, yeah, you buggered it there. Right. So now we all know Harry's thick. Yeah, I mean, I'm clearly the superior football brain. Yeah, right. Well, that's it from us, and yeah, we'll see you whenever. Yeah,